It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yes, here we go again. It is the 12th day of October 2017. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That, of course, is where you go if you would like to click on the chat room tab and pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump into the madcap multimedia wacky zany extravaganza. Real time that is the Horn chat room in the hours during which this program is live. If you do so, you'll be greeted by Anatole and Silent R. Lamar and the longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space this Northern California afternoon to become Man Cave, joined by his partner, midweek utility pinch hit chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgia Stan. We are up and running both at headonradionetwork.com, whiterosesociety.org, Stitcher, TuneIn, Ruko, yeah, and of course, the ever-present and entirely reliable Headon, H-E-A-D-O-N dot live, courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa. This is, of course, a listener-supported broadcast operation. We have no corporate sponsorships and no liberal progressive multimillionaires out there making all of this happen. This happens because of you. And in this, our anniversary month, I can say that it's been happening for over a decade. Thanks to you. Thanks also, well, thanks to our subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Christopher, and thank you very kindly to Angelica in Portland. Thank you, Angelica. Thank you to our subscriber, Mark, in Minnesota. Thank you, Mark. Thanks very kindly to Gary in New York. Thank you, Gary. And thank you to our subscriber, Paul in California. One and all, thank you very, very much for being part of the subscription effort that picks up shortfalls when in-show nightly fundraising falls short. Thank you very kindly for letting me know, Sparky, loud and clear, Bob. Appreciate it. It's good to know that everything's working. Yay. So last night, you know, we started the program with about a $300 fundraising shortfall. A couple of folks jumped in last night, and then our subscribers caught up this evening. Took it down to what would have been about $200. But you may recall that last night I said, to heck with contributions to the Horn. Please contribute to the senatorial campaign in Alabama of Doug Jones. And so this might be a good time to remind folks. Well, okay, so that just is as it is. And what we'll do is we'll just start fresh this evening with a $200 fundraising goal. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, and 32 at 6 and a quarter, and 64 at $3.13, because we're rounding up that half penny for an oil change and a grease job on the Maybach. Okay? Yes. Here at the, you know, we've got a list of things that we have to take care of here at the mansion. Mm-hmm. But that being the case, I hope, I don't know, I have no way of knowing, but I hope that there were 10 people at $20 or 20 people at $10 or one person at 200 or whatever, who kicked in $200 to Doug Jones's campaign last night. I really, really hope that. Because, well, today is 2 months to the day from the Alabama special election for Senate. And Doug Jones has a chance. Because, and as I've said before, and I will say this as plainly as I know how, if Democrats, if liberals, if progressives, if Greens cannot come together and agree, at least on this occasion, that supporting the candidate who is challenging Roy Tola goddamn Moore is something we can all agree on, then we're kind of screwed forever. I just want to be clear about that. There's not going to be a better opportunity to take back a Senate, a Senate seat in the Deep South than the one that presents itself to us 2 months from today, December the 12th. Well, I mean, today's October the 12th, but 2 months from now is December the 12th. Can we agree on that? I mean, can the most progressive of the progressives and the most centrist of the centrists and the most conservative of the conservative Democrats, can we all agree that keeping a man who makes Steve King of Iowa and Ted Cruz of Texas and Louie Gohmert look like freaking Leon Trotsky out of the Senate is worth coming together for? God Almighty, I hope we can. So, can the AFL CIO, can they agree that stopping a theocratic madman from entering the Senate is worth the effort? Can the National Organization for Women agree that stopping a theocratic madman is worth the effort? Can the Sierra Club, the Natural Resources Defense Council, can they agree that stopping a theocratic madman with no regard for this planet whatsoever because he's a dominionist creationist is worth the effort? Can Hillary and Bernie agree that stopping this theocratic madman is worth the effort? Because if we can't, as I said, we're screwed forever. And the consequences of being screwed forever are real and long-lasting. Remember, if you get that Senate seat, you only have to win two more of the Republicans up for re-election. One of those seats is going to be empty, and someone almost as nuts, if not every bit as nuts, as Roy Tola Moore, is going to be running in Tennessee. All we need is a highly recognizable, reasonable, decent candidate to run against Marsha Gedness, Blackburn. My God, she's so disgusting that she announced her campaign with a video showing parts of dead babies. Wowzer. But the... what's his face in Nevada? He's vulnerable. He voted to take away people's health care. What looked very much like an impossible task... Well, I mean, taking back the Senate actually looks a little bit doable, doesn't it? Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And opportunities like this don't come around just, you know, every year. There's absolutely nothing else going on of any real political merit in December of 2017, election-wise. A little laser beam focus would go a long way. Yes, I know, Brother Deacon Ace is saying, what? No mega donor underwriters? You mean to tell me you haven't been cashing the Harvey Weinstein money checks? No, I haven't. Haven't seen the first one. Of course, I don't think I'm old Harv's type. God knows I know he's not mine. So, no. But, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that the quack scientists over at Horn Labs have been working overtime, hand over fist, hammer and tongs they work, constantly trying to reach new pinnacles of absolutely useless non-nutritional bullshit of nutritional supplements for you. So tonight I'm proud to announce new from Horn Labs, ham-fisted horseradish. That's right, ham-fisted horseradish from Horn Labs. You know, there's a lot of people out there that don't care for horseradish, and there's no better way to get the daily goodness, the nutritional wonderment of a big boatload of horseradish than ham-fisted horseradish from Horn Labs. You know, it's a long time now. Horseradish goes really well with, you know, it's nice, creamy horseradish with thin, sliced, sugar-cured, hickory-smoked ham. And ham-fisted horseradish capsules from Horn Labs brings that all together for you. And ham-fisted horseradish from Horn Labs is even kosher because it's not real. So gobble down your ham-fisted horseradish capsules with gleeful abandon and no fear whatsoever that any deity will sneer down its all-powerful nose at you for taking ham-fisted horseradish from Horn Labs. Yes, at only $29.95 for a month's supply of ham-fisted horseradish, it's a real bargain in the burgeoning world of bullshit nutritional supplements that do absolutely nothing for you. And for only another dime, you can get a two-month supply for $60. 2 months' worth of ham-fisted horseradish from Horn Labs for only $60, and only $91.50 will get you a three-month supply of ham-fisted horseradish. You can't afford 4 months' worth. Do not call now, because operators are not standing by, and it's not a free call. Because this is, of course, another bullshit nutritional supplement from Horn Labs. The only difference being that it's no more of or less of a bullshit nutritional supplement than all the other bullshit nutritional supplements that are being offered for you out there in Radio Land. Ham-fisted horseradish from Horn Labs. You'll be glad it's not real. Ah? Okay. Labor man asks, but Bob, will it help my boner? Absolutely. Ham-fisted horseradish from Horn Labs is a boon to any boner. Have you ever seen a ham bone? Yeah, they're hard, aren't they? Ham-fisted horseradish from Horn Labs. Use no hooks. Do not fold, spindle, or mutilate. This side up. Yes, Arthur. As a matter of fact, it's buy one, get 29 free at the cost of 29, well, something like that, $29.95. Yeah, absolutely. Not sure what you're getting at there, Silent R. Lamar. There's no quack at Horn Labs. Bob, how say you are sorry, Bob? I think that's now say you're sorry. No, I'm not sorry. We're all quacks at Horn Labs because only quacks come up with bullshit nutritional supplements to try to hustle on an unsuspecting audience. Plus, if you act now, remember, you'll get a tiny little handful of test strips that you can use on your ham-fisted horseradish from Horn Labs to demonstrate that it has absolutely no nutritional value whatsoever. Yes, Kid Mark, you're catching on. Ham-fisted horseradish from Horn Labs is buy two for the price of three. Okay. Now that we've dealt with that. Marty wants to know, how is it on Polish sausage with sauerkraut, onions, and Gulden spicy brown mustard? Well, Gulden spicy brown mustard has not offered me any money to do a product placement here, so I'll thank you for not injecting their product into this program, Marty. But apart from that, ham-fisted horseradish, well, you can't put it on Polish sausage with sauerkraut because it's a capsule. That's the whole point, Marty. Try to keep up, buddy. Marty's just trying to make trouble. Going back to what I said about if we can't all agree, Marty says, I don't know. What do Stein and Nader say? Don't care. But maybe ordinary greens could, you know, because I'm sure that if you ask Stein and Nader, they'd just say that there's no difference between Doug Jones and Roy Tolamore. Mm-hmm. Ugh. Okay, so it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, this 12th day of October, 2017, here at the Horn. By the way, Marty says, if I seem in a foul humor today, I apologize, but 3 hours at the DMV has negative effects on my sense of humor. I can well understand how. Yeah, a whole bunch of nervous baseball fans out there, too, for this evening's Game 5 between the Nats and the Cubbies. Somebody going to be unhappy this evening. And yes, I admit I'm rooting for the Cubbies. Meanwhile, Keith says, supplements. Bob, has the lab finished the work on BS baloney? I think it's been in the works for a while. Well, yeah, you know, but Keith, it takes a lot to perfect your BS baloney capsules. Cramming all that baloney into those little tiny capsules, well, you can see the technological problems that are presented. Bill says, isn't Marsha trying to take Al Gore's old seat? I think Corker took Gore's seat. Sounds about right, because I think Lamar Alexander has been in the Senate from Tennessee since Christ was a corporal in the Army of God. Or maybe it's Fred Thompson's old seat. Remember Half-Dead Fred? Mm-hmm. Anyway, it is... Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. And we use Thorn in the Side Thursday to take note of those particular instances that make us go, ow! Yeah. And God don't... It is a veritable bouquet of thorns. Let's run out to Talibandiana real quick, where apparently for all their talk about kneeling for the national, not kneeling for the national anthem and putting hands over hearts and everything, when it comes down to the actual freedoms for which that banner standeth, yeah, not so much. Consider representing Jim Lucas, a repig-lickin' from Seymour in Talibandiana. He has drafted and will introduce a bill, according to the paper in Indianapolis. He's a big fan of he's a big fan of the Second Amendment, just not the First. He likes him some guns. Well, he's going to introduce a bill in the legislature of Talibandiana in which he would require journalists in Talibandiana to be licensed by the state police. And it's a stunt of sorts. He's using the wording from the gun permit laws in Talibandiana because representing Lucas is an ammosexual fundamentalist. And he doesn't think anybody should have to have a permit to ever carry a freedom protector most anywhere in Talibandiana he or she wants to. It remains to be seen if he will actually file this bill that defecates all over the First Amendment of the Constitution and would last about as long as a firecracker in hell if it were actually passed into law. Mm-hmm. This, of course, after Geezer Disgustus declared that, he's disgusted by press freedom. How long, oh Lord, how long? Staying in Talibandiana for a minute, let's check in with a 57-year-old dentist, Alan Friz. Alan Friz and his wife Amy, of age 36, have been arrested. They're the parents of 9 children, one of whom is a special needs little girl. She's 14 years old. And he's been, Alan and his wife have been arrested for keeping the 14-year-old special needs girl locked in a cage every night for a month. And while they kept her locked in a cage, they deprived her of food and water and provided her a little pan to go poo-poo and pee-pee in the cage. They even put her name on the cage. Yes. Anybody want to guess how these people vote? Mm-hmm. It was entirely discovered by accident. A search warrant was executed on the home there in Du Bois County, Talibandiana. Police had been called to the home on a report that a child was out of control. But then they walked into the house and they found a big wooden cage with a mattress and the aforementioned poo-poo pee-pee pan labeled with the name of the 14-year-old special needs girl. When the police asked Dr. Friz why they would do such a thing, he said that his 14-year-old special needs daughter had been threatening to hurt other members of the family and had to be confined. She has some developmental impairment, the 14-year-old does. She's been assessed by the Department of Family and Children's Services in Talibandiana. when they interviewed her, she told them that not only did she frequently have to go in the cage, but that while she was in the cage, her daddy, Dr. Friz, would allegedly fondle her breasts. She said it started when she was 13 years old. And it started when sometimes Dr. Friz would come into the bathroom while she was in the shower. Another time he walked into the bedroom and turned the light off and felt around on her breasts until other children walked into the room and turned the lights on. I don't know. Wow. You know, Jesus. She went on to explain to investigators that Dr. Friz would allegedly fondle her while she was confined in the cage. She said she told her mama, and mama did nothing. Mama, meanwhile, when she discovered that there was an arrest warrant out for her, took off with the rest of the children. She was eventually caught, and she, along with Dr. Friz, was arrested. The children were taken into the custody of Children and Family and Children's Services. And at one point in time, a TV reporter stuck a microphone into Dr. Friz's face and said, why would you do it? Why would you keep a 14-year-old girl in a cage? Replied Dr. Friz, and if you were wondering how he voted before, you'll probably be pretty sure now. Replied Dr. Friz, the Lord is good. He declared that the Lord is good, and that's why, no, Jesus Christ. Jesus wept. Yep. It's a Mike Pence kind of day, though. They had an executive order signing ceremony in the White House today. Because there aren't any bill signing ceremonies because, well, the Congress really can't get much passed in the way of bills to send to Tangerine Tiberius to sign. So they make a big to-do out of signing executive orders. In this particular case, it was an executive order. I don't know what that means. David says we're on a loop on TuneIn.live. There is no TuneIn.live. There's HeadOn.live. And I'm not trying to be obtuse about it, but I nobody's telling me anything along those lines. I'm sorry. Arthur, no, Dr. Friz is the try to keep up, Arthur. Okay. Arthur pointing out, now, Bob, Dr. Friz was born that way, amosexual. Well, it's uncertain. That is uncertain. Okay, so we've got some trans-Pacific cultural questions here. Robert in Australia asks, what is it with the DMV? I'm always hearing complaints about it. Here in Oz, it was called the RTA, Roads and Traffic Authority. It's now called Services New South Wales. All the different government services are in one spot. Last time I went for a driver license renewal, took all of 15 minutes, including having a photo taken. If not for the need for a photo, I'd have done it all by mail. Well, but see, Robert, you say what you will about your conservative government. Generally speaking, you're not quite as eaten up by bureaucracy as we are here. And I doubt if there's a state in the union where the DMV has a good reputation. If Marty wants to elaborate on what 3 hours at the DMV is all about, I'll let him. I've Just about every American who's got a driver's license at some point in time has spent 3 hours at some DMV. Is it baked in? I don't know. Ron and Raleigh with a note. Speaking of baseball, a quote from one of the great ball players. namely, Chico Escuela. Yeah. Keeps his eye on the ball. Doesn't seem to want to load right now, so I'm sorry. We'll have to try again sometime. Anyway, so they had an executive order signing ceremony in the White House today. Note to David, if it is in fact headon.live, you can fix the problem by simply refreshing the page. That, according to Brother Deacon Asa. So we've taken care of that little technical gremlin. Anyway, back to the signing ceremony. The signing ceremony that they had in the White House today was for Marcus Aurelius to sign an executive order trying to kill a little bit more of the Affordable Care Act. And he stood up and he talked about the failing Obamacare. And he made gestures like he always does with his tiny little baby-sized hands. And then he walked away. Now, the purpose of the executive order was to put in place to gut one of the insurance regulations in the Affordable Care Act that essentially creates or sustains the marketplace. Insurance commissioners from all over the country have said this is going to be disastrous. The insurance companies have said, this is going to be disastrous. People who have health insurance have said, this is going to be disastrous. So naturally, the 71-year-old toddler said, well, we're definitely going to do it then. And so he made his remarks and then just turned around and started to walk out of the room. At which point in time, Mike Pencilneck Geek had to sort of corral him and make him come back and sign the executive order.
Once and for all, we will have great health care in our country. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Shakes hands with
all right,
Virginia Fox.
President Trump right there. He was announcing that he'll be signing this executive order.
Shoulder tap to
healthcare policy in America.
Randy
he'll be
Paul.
Sitting down at the desk right next to that lectern. He'll be signing that executive order.
Looks some more like waving.
Maybe he was about to leave and now they're
gets ready
to
leave.
To
Mike Pencilneck Geek says, no, stops him. You got to come back and sign it, dummy.
Right, so President Trump, let's listen in while he makes it official.
Promoting healthcare, choice and competition all across the United States. This is going to be something that millions and millions of people will be signing up for, and they're going to be very happy. This will be great health care. So congratulations to everybody.
He loves it when they clap for him. Oddly enough, it takes him about 10 seconds to sign his signature. And there's a whole lot of up and down, like maybe, you know, sort of like an EKG gone haywire. Hands the pen to Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. holds it up to display it for the world that he actually wrote his name again.
Thank you, everybody.
And then leaves after giving a really, really gross, yucky hug to Virginia Double X Fox from North Carolina, who continues to, well, the people of North Carolina who sent her to the Congress continue to baffle and amaze me. But then again, unless Democrats figure out some way to come together and engage in a little bit of unity, people from Alabama will likely be, or a tiny, tiny minority of people in Alabama, because there's not going to be much in the way of a turnout, will be sending Roy Tola Moore to the Senate of the United States, a man who thinks that Keith Ellison should not be a member of the House of Representatives because he is not a Christian. So, you know, go figure. The executive order that Trump signed will allow people to purchase healthcare association policies that won't actually cover anything, but they'll have to pay for. And then when they get sick and have to go to the hospital, they're going to find out that they were paying for health insurance coverage that actually didn't provide any, you know, health insurance coverage. At which point the joke is going to be on them. But they'll say that, that of course, that Donald Trump might make America great again. No, he did. Silent R. Lamar, he did sign it. Silent R. Lamar saying he didn't sign it because he doesn't take responsibility for the result of the order. No, he did. He signed it. There were a lot of up and down squiggly things. And then he showed everybody that he'd signed it because he held it up. And soon there will be GIFs out there of him holding it up, and it'll say, "I are a moron," or "I am a fucking moron," or "I am a dotard." Yeah, great idea, Ron in Raleigh says. Maybe you could sign up for one of those 90-day policies. I'm sure you could have your surgery covered. I'm sure I could, too. They'd probably do it with a rusty nail and maybe some leeches. Who knows? You know, out in the middle of the woods. Maybe pack the wound with old rotting leaves and things like that. Yeah. Yeah, see, I don't feel real good about the prospect of having any of this stuff done, you know, here. That's the kind of thing you want to go and have done by people who have, like, done it before. Call me crazy. Oh, by the way, it looks like there may have been another Equifax hack. They had to take down one of their web pages today because they've had another potential breach of their security. An independent security analyst yesterday discovered that their website was attackers trying to trick visitors into installing fraudulent Adobe Flash updates had taken control of the site. This according to Ars Technica. And once again, the question obtains: why are these predatory companies allowed to, you know, exist? Mm-hmm. Oh, I had a conversation. I was just chatting back and forth a little bit with Trey in Kentucky Stan earlier today. He wanders into the chat room from time to time. The governor of Kentucky is a guy named Matt Bevin. He was sent to the governor's office in Kentucky by people who were eager for him to take their health care away from them. Matt Bevin is, not to put too fine a point on it, Otne Ute Aitbre If you own a what I mean, may.
Mm-hmm.
And so WKYT is reporting that that Jason Riley, a reporter for another station, WDRB, has heard Matt Bevin precisely describe his fears that if Kentucky legalizes recreational cannabis, that there will be overdoses of the marijuanas. No, really. Bevin is all upset because a member of the Kentucky State Senate has said that he might be inclined to introduce a bill to legalize and tax cannabis in order to pay for the pension, the state workers' pension system. And that's when Matt Bevin said, well, we can't do that. We'll have all kinds of overdoses on the marijuanas. Probably the wrong accent. An organ, none other than the Drug Enforcement Administration, whom no one will ever accuse of being soft on weed. They say that there have been no overdoses on the marijuanas in a while. Depends on your definition of a while. Yeah. Oh, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Don't you love it? Isn't it just beautiful? Yes, of course it is. Bill, writing again from Pennsylvania. Yes. Notes that Geezer Disgustus's signature looks like he uses a magic marker. Well, that just shows what you know, Bill. It's a crayon. And it's the best crayon because the Marmalade Mugabe has the best crayons. Brown ones and black ones. And that's about it. Jim would like to know, does Horn Labs have something for DeClap? Well, try ham-fisted horseradish, Jim. Ham-fisted horseradish is heavy-handed on the horseradish. And, well, if anything will do it, in the pharmacopoeia of Horn Labs products, it would probably be ham-fisted horseradish. You know, I've always been fond of horseradish, but even though I'm fond of it, I still take a couple of ham-fisted horseradish capsules every morning after I've used the test strip to make sure that it's nutritionally absolutely worthless. Ham-fisted horseradish from Horn Labs. That's true. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, regarding Matt Bevin, lest we forget, this is the same dimwit. What a lovely word that is, dimwit. This is the same dimwit who sent roving bands of dotards to walk the streets and pray the gun crime away. Yes, he did. In Louisville. Absolutely. This is also the same dotard who... we'd only use that twice. This is the same fucking moron who bought in on Ken Ham's ARC experience. His giant ARC theme park, from which people, even during the height of summer theme park visiting season, have stayed away in droves. Matt Bevin. He won his election handily, I might add. Just in case you were wondering. Yeah, the executive order, back to that for a minute, that Trump signed. Here's what it does. It lets small businesses or small associations of people say, a group of uninsured, progressive radio people join together, and they get to buy insurance like a big employer would, and that creates an association health plan. Then, in turn, the executive order lets the association health plan exempt itself from things like maternity care or mental health care, because, you know, uninsured progressive radio hosts are so well known for our emotional stability, especially since November the 8th, 2016. There are those short-term health plans that Ron and Raleigh referenced. They're just plain exempt from ACA regulations. And, like, if you've got pre-existing conditions, you ain't getting on no short-term health plan. Can't stay on it for more than 90 days, just like Ron and Raleigh was talking about. So what will happen is all the healthy people will bail out of ACA plans, leaving sick people in the ACA and causing prices to blow through the roof, which will, of course, be great for the for-profit health insurance CEOs whose only metric of success is whether or not they get to buy a solid gold B-Day with their Christmas bonus money. Yeah. This is all based on the fantasy that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini continues to promulgate, that the Obamacare insurance, the Affordable Care Act insurance markets are collapsing, definitely, very badly, beautifully collapsing. The only problem being that they're not. Throughout January to June of 2017, the latest time for which numbers are available, the marketplace stabilized. Mm-hmm. Well, no more. By the way, one of the other fantasies that he prattles on about is that there are places where there is no insurance available in the marketplace whatsoever. The last day that insurers could have pulled out was September 27th, and on September 27th, there were no counties without coverage. So, you know, just to get a picture of what we're talking about. Meanwhile, in case you're just keeping score at home, the number of people who don't have health insurance in this country is at around 27 million people. By the time if Trump were to get his way, that number would rise to like 47, 50 million. Then, once you get beyond the 27 million people who just flat don't have health insurance, of whom I'm one, then there are millions more of Americans who are underinsured. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. You wouldn't know that, however, if you were watching stations owned by Sinclair. Steve from Georgistan briefly alluded to that last night in our conversation. They bought Tribune Broadcasting. That's how the really enjoyable TV series Outsiders came to disappear. Because the plug was pulled on it so that Sinclair wouldn't have to have that financial burden, because they really weren't interested in that sort of programming. What they're interested in is being Trump TV in everything but name. Consider, for instance, a program hosted by a guy named Mark Hyman called Behind the Headlines. It's in Behind the Headlines that Mark Hyman claims, "We have the greatest healthcare in the world. Did Obamacare make us healthier? No. With Obamacare in place, more Americans are dying than ever before." Now, this doesn't mean Obamacare is killing people, but it does mean that Obamacare isn't making people healthier. When actually Obamacare does make people healthier, because more people have health insurance as a result of it than before Obamacare existed. These little propaganda blurbs featuring Mark Hyman are a daily staple on Sinclair stations. And Sinclair is growing like a cancer in this country. Interestingly, although Tangerine Tiberius is not doesn't think much of the First Amendment, he doesn't call out things like this, which are demonstrably false, as fake news. 174 television stations, which actually do have to have FCC licenses, you know, the networks, like NBC, doesn't have to have a license. Individual television stations, which use the public airwaves, do. You know, that's just another one of those little details that the dumbest man ever to occupy the White House, and I'm including George W. Bush in that list, doesn't know and doesn't care to know and isn't curious about, because he's a, everybody with me, 1, 2, 3, fucking moron. Yeah, these outright lies run on 174 stations all over the United States. And yes, Sinclair Broadcasting is growing like a cancer. The Tribune Media purchase is still waiting for approval. That'll take the 174 up to, wait, ciphering involved. It's 176, 206, 216 stations. Reaching 87.3 million homes. Out of the 119.6 million homes in the U.S. that have a television. It's impressive. That's a great little propaganda megaphone there. So when you hear that phrase, fake news, just remember that there actually is something out there that is. But it's not NBC. And it's not ABC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC. It's people who just make up stuff and put it out onto the public airwaves because they can. because even lies, outright lies, demonstrable 200-proof falsehoods are protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. Yeah, Arthur knows how it's going to work. Trump keeps hollering that Obamacare doesn't work. And Arthur says then the GOP will say Obamacare doesn't work right after they killed it. And they'll say it was government-run health care or something. All of which is absolutely true. Ron and Raleigh with a note. Ham-fisted horseradish. Open those capsules, mix the powder with feather moss and mustard root, and make a poultice. Smear that on the affected areas, and I guarantee you will have a reaction. Mind you, says Ron, drop water on the poultice occasionally to keep it damp. Well, you call it a poultice up here in the hills, Ron. We call it a plaster. Big believers in mustard plaster. Mm-hmm. It works wonders. Absolutely. Yeah, I know. See what I mean when I said we had an absolute bundle of thorns? Yeah. Lots of thorns. Definitely lots and lots of thorns. What else? Oh, I mentioned the sleazy ad with which Marsha, goodness, Blackburn initiated her senatorial campaign. Well, there's another woman out there with a sleazy ass ad. Let's check in with New Jersey gubernatorial candidate Kim Guadagno. I'm sure I'm not doing that name justice. Kim Guadagno. We'll call it Smith. No, Kim Guadagno. Do you pronounce the G? Is it like how gabagoo is spelled, and it doesn't look or sound anything like gabagoo, but it's gabagoo? I don't know. We'll probably have to make... I'll get the boys and girls over at Horn Labs to work on some gabagoo capsules right away. Now, Kim Guadagno, we're just going to pronounce all the letters there, she put out an ad last night. She's running against Phil Murphy, a Democrat. And Kim Guadagno doesn't like sanctuary cities because she's not very fond of immigrants. Because, of course, you know that Guadagno is an old Haudenosaunee word meaning, what the fuck are all of you white people doing here all of a sudden? That's where Guadagno comes from. Only it doesn't. Phil Murphy had said that he supports sanctuary cities to keep, bigoted law enforcement agencies like ICE from engaging in sort of fascist roundups. And then, bang, immediately, here comes the ad from Kim Guadagno, who must most assuredly be 100% indigenous, because, I mean, it's not like she comes from immigrant stock or anything.
Illegal alien and child rapist Jose Carranza shot 4 New Jersey students in the head. 3 died, shattering their families. When asked about deport...
I'm guessing when you get shot in the head, it doesn't shatter your family so much as it shatters your head, but that's one of those language things, and never mind. These people.
Shattering their families. When asked about deporting criminal illegals, Phil Murphy said,
my bias is going to be having their back.
Make no mistake, Murphy will have the backs of deranged murderers like Carranza, providing sanctuary in New Jersey.
We'll be a sanctuary, not just city, but state.
Murphy doesn't have our backs. He has theirs. Phil Murphy, too dangerous for New Jersey.
Yeah. Theirs. He'll have theirs. And then there's the scary picture of the brown-skinned killer. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it show the ad also shows the pictures of the three people who were killed by the murderer. Now, we don't know if they contacted the murdered children's families to find, and since they referred to the fact that the families were shattered, we don't know if Kim Guadagno's campaign reached out to them for the purpose of getting permission to exploit their dead children. Probably not. That's one of those white privilege things that you just do when you're Kim Guadagno, Republican candidate for New Jersey governor. And of course, the ad comes across like something that, who's that, James O'Keefe, that turd who does the doctored up Republican videos that right. The guy that Shirley Sherrod had to school. The guy who got charged with a felony for trying to break into, what was it, Mary Landrieu's office in Louisiana? Posing as a guy from the phone company? Yeah. Because you hear that line where Phil Murphy said, my bias is going to be toward having their back. And the script says, when asked about deporting criminal illegals, Phil Murphy said, my bias is going to be toward having their back. Would you care to hear? Because that, wow, you'd really have to be a dumb son of a bitch politician to do something like that, wouldn't you? Well, yes. And, or maybe he didn't say it, and you're just a cynical, vicious, lying, no good, lowered in a snake's belly in a wagon rut, teabagging, trumpanzee, maggots, asshole Republican candidate for governor in New Jersey to make a commercial like that. So here's what he actually got said. They asked Phil Murphy about the Carranza case at a town hall at the Rutgers Eagleton Institute of Politics. And they asked him whether police should notify federal immigration agents about crimes involving undocumented immigrants. Being a person with a pretty good functioning brain, Phil Murphy said, I think context and, oh boy, context, well, you're going to lose. That word alone will lose a whole bunch of voters. I mean, or at least it would in a place like Alabama. Maybe New Jersey's smarter. Wait a minute. They elected Chris Christie. Sorry. I think context would be the field is so tilted against Dreamers, against newly arrived immigrant brothers and sisters. That's what Phil Murphy said. My bias is going to be toward having their back because there's always going to be an example in any population of somebody who does something awful or whatever it is in this case at a heinous level, and I'm not denying that, but then we got to be careful not to extrapolate that and then throw a similar blanket over an entire group of folks. You'll notice that Kim Guadagno is not running any ads about guy next door 60-somethings with a house full of guns who wind up slaughtering 59 people and shooting almost 600 others and saying that we've got to be careful about those white males out there. No. Sorry. Uh-uh. Well, and exactly, Arthur. Arthur says, well, this is Willie Horton. I mean, an illegal immigrant who murdered. He's also Obama's secret gay lover. I know. I saw one little shitbird on Facebook today refer to Michael Obama, and also using the anti-trans slur tranny. Mm-hmm. And see, you got to remember, we're having a great discussion in this country about fake news and propaganda and, you know, bullshit information, stuff that is not true. The chief operating officer of Facebook sat down in a very stylized interview today with Mike Allen of Axios. I watched some of it. Not a lot of heat, not a lot of light. But the Russians are not the only people engaged in the propagation of bullshit information. Not by a long shot. The Republican Party and, Kim Guadagno in this case, and the Republican Party in general, have been actively engaged in this sort of thing for, decades. Decades. Because freedom. And a certain portion of the electorate eats it up with a spoon. That certain portion of the electorate would be, you know, white people. Scared to damn death white people. Those kind of white people that have 50 guns in their house. Because when somebody comes through the window with a box cutter, they're going to... Well, there's one guy, I read this in the aftermath of Las Vegas. There's this one guy who's like Instagram famous or something, and he's got lots of money and lots of privilege and lots of guns. And at one point in time, he posted something where he said he showed off all of his little blue steel penis extensions, and he said, "My only worry is that when the break-in comes, I won't be able to decide which gun to use to kill him." Oh, really? And happened to hear about the shooting in Las Vegas and ran off to get his guns and then ran back and couldn't find nobody to shoot at. Thereby proving that the good guy with the gun theory, assuming this guy's a good guy, which is kind of a stretch, is absolute, unmitigated, no doubt about it, hogwash. Yep. So, you know, just another thorn in the side. Lots and lots of thorns in the side. Some other notes coming in. From Robert in Australia, subject line, free speech and all that. I know you have free speech and all that in the USA, but a political ad like that run during an election here in Australia would have you in court faster than you can blink. I know, because it has. Well, see, that's because you're just existing under the lash of tyranny, Robert, there in Australia. You don't live in America, so you just don't know how free you aren't. I mean, sure, you can probably choose between like two different kinds of breakfast cereal and maybe three different brands of beer that's better than probably 50% of the beer in the United States. But you're not free. You don't have real freedom. Well, hell, you can't put a freedom protector in the waistband of your trousers and go down to your local shops and carry your freedom protector with you because you're too much of a chicken shit to go for a couple of liters of milk without a peacemaker. You're not free, Robert. We feel so sad and so sorry for you up here where we're so free that a disaffected white man can take a room full of weapons and mow down 600 human beings. Now that, by God, that's some freedom. And by the way, all the Australian members of the Horn Family Community Congregation, y'all can quit bragging a bit now about how many people got killed at the Port Arthur Massacre, because I think Las Vegas finally got you beat. USA, 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 we're number one, we're number one, we're number one. Somebody fire up Lee Greenwood. Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Thank you there, Brother Deacon Asa. Her name is pronounced Guadagno. And why does she spell it Guadagno? Oh, it's what happens when you put a G next to an N in like ancient Cherokee or Reformed Egyptian or something. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So, 10 minutes past the hour. I'd say that will do for that'll do for a filibobster this evening if you would like to engage in the conversation. Oh, by the way, Todd in South Carolina, Stan, did finally send me the picture of that yogurt pizza crust. Damn, that's pretty. I'm thinking that's going to happen. I'm going to get the pizza stone out. That's going to happen real soon. I got to think about something really, really special to top it with. Whoa. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Wait a minute. Cowbell for Earther there. Liters of milk? Lib talker tries to sneak in communist measurement standard. Damn it. You caught me. Happens all the time. But right. And see that? Look there. Y'all measure stuff in liters and centigrades, Robert. Only people who aren't free have to measure things in liters and centigrades and kilometers. Little short pissant kilometers that aren't anywhere near as long as a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual mile. Lord have mercy. All right, so we'll take a break. It being Thursday, we have the Green News Report coming up from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. We've only got $200 to raise this evening. Yes, here I am, talking about fundraising again, even though I do despise it. Only got $200 to raise this evening. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, and the rest of it, 200 bucks. We are presently at zero. Zero. Zip. Zilch. Nada. Zed. Nil. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it won't stay that way. And no, I don't like that bumper at all. That was not that either. What else do we have? Okay, yeah, why not? Not terribly inspired here, but... Oh, well. Yeah, if you want to get involved in the program, you know how to call in, right? 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. Or from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. They both land in the same place. So if you want to engage in some conversation radio, you are more than welcome. Break time. We'll be back. I'm Bob.
Well, it's all. All right. You can sit around and wait for the phone to ring, waiting for someone to tell you everything. Sit around and wonder what tomorrow will bring. Maybe a diamond ring.
Well, it's all right, even if they say you're wrong. Well, it's all right, sometimes you gotta be strong. Well, it's all right, as long as you got somewhere to lay. Well, it's all right, every day is judgment day.
Maybe somewhere down the road away, think of me and wonder where I am these days. Maybe somewhere down the road when somebody plays the purple haze.
Well, it's all right, even when push comes to shove. Well, it's all right, if you got someone to love. Well, it's all right, everything will work out fine. Well, it's all right, we're going to the end of the line.
Don't have to be ashamed of the car I drive.
The end of the line.
I'm just glad to be here, happy to feel that.
The end of the line, of the line.
And it don't matter if you're by my side.
Thursday, October 12, 2017.
We've had big fires in the past. This is one of the biggest, most serious. It's not over.
California's wine country firestorms continue to rage out of control.
The CDC is evaluating 4 deaths, possibly from leptospirosis.
Risk of waterborne diseases rises in battered Puerto Rico. Plus,
this is the jewel in the crown of America's fisheries resources.
Trump's EPA greases the way for massive controversial pebble mine in the world's most valuable salmon fishery.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
FEMA asked her to write a memo requesting what she needed.
A memo! FEMA wants a memo! What FEMA really needs is a to-do list. To do f***ing everything.
Yep. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, yes, Desi Doyen, I think we need to give more money to FEMA. What do you think?
Yes, I definitely think we do.
In the meantime, California State Fire Chief Ken Pimlott warned Wednesday night that gusty winds were picking up again and that the fires in Northern California are going to continue to get worse before they get better.
Yes, unfortunately, the firestorm in Northern California's wine country continues to rage on and now ranks as one of the worst fire emergencies in California history. Both state and federal disasters have been declared in northern areas of the state, freeing up resources to fight the fires. The wind-driven fires are extremely fast-moving and intense, and as of airtime, have killed at least 21 people, destroyed more than 35 500 buildings, incinerated entire neighborhoods, and forced the evacuation of tens of thousands of people.
And it should be noted that hundreds are still missing. Hopefully they're just out of communication, but that death toll is expected to rise.
California fire officials say at least 22 large wildfires are now burning across the state. The cause of the Wine Country fires has not yet been determined, but the San Jose Mercury News reports a preliminary focus is on whether overhead power lines were downed by the historic wind event on Sunday night that may have sparked multiple fires simultaneously. Forest and climate scientists also warn that man-made conditions have intensified this record western wildfire season. Decades of fire suppression, a buildup of fuels, development in fire-prone areas, and climate change intensifying drought and heat. California just had its hottest summer on record in 2017. In a press conference on Wednesday, California Governor Jerry Brown suggested these firestorms are the new normal.
That's the way it is. With a warming climate and dry weather and reducing moisture. These kind of catastrophes have happened. They'll continue to happen, and we have to be prepared to do everything we can to mitigate.
In Puerto Rico, in the ongoing humanitarian crisis, 3 weeks after Hurricane Maria made landfall, the official death toll in the wake of the storm has been raised to 45. 40% of Puerto Ricans still lack access to potable drinking water. FEMA has authorized $70 million in water system repairs, and officials have issued a boil water advisory after four deaths suspected to be from contaminated water. 90% of the island lacks electricity. A temporary waiver of shipping restrictions under the Jones Act has now expired, and the Trump administration says it has no plans to reinstate it, doubling the cost of shipments to the battered island. In Alaska, the controversial Pebble Mine has been brought back from the dead by the Trump administration. According to internal emails obtained by CNN, an hour after Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt met with the CEO of the Pebble Mine, Pruitt ordered EPA staff to withdraw an Obama-era scientific study finding that the massive mine in Alaska's pristine Bristol Bay watershed would cause irreversible damage to the world's most valuable salmon fishery and result in complete and irreversible loss of fish habitat that supports 14,000 jobs. Pruitt's move allows the proposed gold and copper mine to move forward. The majority of Alaskans voted against the mine last year. That's according to Alaska Dispatch News columnist and Alaska native Shannon Moore here in an interview with the broadcast.
We were going to have to choose one resource over the other. Were we going to choose gold over salmon or salmon over gold? There was a paradigm switch that happened that said salmon are sacred and we're not going to trade them.
Professor of Fisheries Science Thomas Quinn of the University of Washington, in an interview with CNN, called it a uniquely bad place to put a mine.
This is the jewel in the crown of America's fisheries resources in salmon. If you don't think this is worth saving, what is?
The public has until Tuesday, October 17th, to weigh in on Pruitt's policy reversal by leaving a comment at regulations.gov. That's regulations.gov.
What is it?
Regulations.gov.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. For more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Here's to Alaska, here's to the people, here's to the wild, and here's to the free. Here's to my life in a chosen country. Here's to Alaska and me. Oh,
was that John Denver? I haven't heard John Denver in a while. 23 minutes past the hour, almost halfway done with this thorn in the thigh.
The thorn in the thigh.
It's halfway to Donald Trump with this thorn in the side Thursday. I'm Bob Kincaid, of course. And just a reminder, ham-fisted horseradish, like all other products from Horn Labs, is not made of anything actually resembling what we claim is in it. That's why the test strips are so handy. You can test and make sure that they're all actually bullshit nutritional supplements. Fact of the matter is, like all the other Horn Labs supplements, Ham-fisted horseradish primarily consists of pencil shavings from the pencil sharpener back when my kids were in elementary school and we still used pencil sharpeners. Horn Labs, ham-fisted horseradish, except no substitutes, because then you won't be getting the pencil shavings. Right? Okay, so we got New Jersey. Oh, here's a... Okay, so the ACA thing is troubling and worrisome. How about this, though? Now, this is just culturally disgusting. The United States announced today-ish that we're going to pull out of UNESCO. UNESCO stands for the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. Well, of course we are, as, given the fact that with the ascent of Donald J. Trump, we really have nothing of any educational, scientific, or cultural value left in the government of the United States. Now, do we? But of course, and this will get me in trouble, the reason given for pulling out of UNESCO is that UNESCO displays an anti-Israel bias. Oh, for pity's sakes. What this stems from, and you know, you like to lay everything right on the doorstep of Donald J. Trump, but sometimes you just can't. Back in 2011, when Palestine was recognized by UNESCO, the United States, doing the bidding of Bibi Netanyahu, squealed loud and long, and from that moment forward have refused to pay our fair share of the bill for UNESCO, which is about 22%. And so this is just, you know, the latest. Now, this is not UNICEF, this is UNESCO. These are the folks who do things like designate protected cultural, world cultural heritage sites. Places like Angkor Wat, for instance. Or how about the ancient ruins of Palmyra in Syria? Because, you know, who needs that, right? Yeah. Heather Nauert is a State Department spokesperson, and she said that we'll be bailing out of UNESCO in December, and that we will, instead of being a member, we will be an observer. So, in other words, we'll sit and bitch, but we won't actually do anything. Heather Nauert said, "This decision was not taken lightly and reflects U.S. concerns with mounting arrears at UNESCO, the need for fundamental reform in the organization, and continuing anti-Israel bias at UNESCO." Well, the reason they're in arrears at UNESCO is because we started deadbeating on the goddamn bill 6 years ago. The United States hopes to remain engaged with UNESCO, and the White House will contribute U.S. views, perspectives, and expertise on some of the important issues undertaken by the organization. Well, you know what? If we're going to bail out on it, doesn't that sort of entitle UNESCO to, you know, when we stand up and say, "Well, we're the United States, brooga, 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 Israel, brooga, brooga," doesn't that give UNESCO the right to say, "Sit down and shut up, you're not a member. You're not recognized." the head of UNESCO, Irina Bokova, responded. She said, universality is critical to UNESCO's mission to strengthen international peace and security in the face of hatred and violence, to defend human rights and dignity. She also described the decision to the New York Times as very, very regrettable. It's very weird that it's today. Among other things, just in case people don't know, UNESCO has actually made efforts toward combating anti-Semitism, and they've made efforts toward increasing literacy in the world. They've focused on human rights. They've tried to foster intercultural dialogue. Yeah. But damn it, they crossed a line when they started acting like Palestinians were human beings. Right. So, let's see. No Paris Climate Accords. He's going to try to bail out on the Iran agreement. Clean power plan, gone. Out of UNESCO. Jesus. Oh, and by the way, we finally have a nominee to head NOAA. This will be important to at least one member of the Horn Family Community Congregation. The head of NOAA has the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, has previously been headed by, you know, scientists. Well, the new head of NOAA, the new nominee to head NOAA, is the corporate head honcho of AccuWeather. No, I'm not kidding. AccuWeather. And that's a story that's got long legs. This goes all the way back to the Bush administration. Back when Rick Bro-Fro-Mix Santorum was still a member of the United States Senate and was trying to gut NOAA and provide its monetize and corporatize government atmospheric and weather research and put all the money into AccuWeather. Yeah, it only took 10-15 years, but by God, here we are. If we can't give NOAA to AccuWeather, we can bring AccuWeather into NOAA. Son of a bitch. But there we are. We're going to bail out of UNESCO. You know, once upon a time, the prestige of the United States actually helped in preserving threatened World Heritage sites. We don't have any prestige anymore, though. No. So we'll see what happens. French President Emmanuel Macron has spoken out. He has described the ongoing importance of the work of UNESCO. The French ambassador to the UN, François Delattre, said UNESCO is about promoting our ideals and values through culture, education, and science. This is why it's so important to have our American friends on board now more than ever, as these values are contested and as we need an America that stays committed to world affairs. Curiously, and I'm sure entirely coincidentally, Israel has declared that it is also bailing out of UNESCO.
you know, there's probably a bunch of World Heritage sites where Donnie Dimwit would like to build a golf course or a skeevy, bedbug-ridden hotel or something. Yeah, sure. I mentioned the Iran agreement. Damn. And last night we talked about the Vanity Fair article talking about how he's lost a step and he's losing it and he's coming unglued and he's increasingly isolated and he talks about how he hates everybody in the White House. Well, it turns out, you know, the story about the business at the Pentagon and why we can't have 10 times as many nukes and things like that. Yeah, that was summer. And so, too, was a meeting in mid-July when he threw an absolute toddler tantrum over the Iran agreement. You know, the agreement that has thus far succeeded in keeping Iran from developing a nuclear weapon and becoming another threat to the continued existence of the human species as a going concern on planet Earth. Because, see, Rexxon Tillerson and Mad Dog Jim Mattis had spoken in favor of the Iran deal. They'd pointed out that it was working and that Iran was actually living up to its obligations and that it was providing some stability in a most unstable region. In a Washington Post story, a person familiar with the meeting said he threw a fit. He was furious, really furious. It's clear he felt jammed. This is pathetic. This is pitiful. So, you know, goodbye. Well, here's what's happened. Because everybody working in the White House is engaged in just trying to keep the 71-year-old toddler from destroying, starting World War III, they have to figure out ways to placate him. They have to hold up. You know, it's like when you've got a fussy baby at a dinner table in a restaurant. I've seen this before. I've seen a parent reach in her purse or into his pocket, and he'll pull out, or she'll pull out, the car keys, and they'll hand them to baby over at the high chair, and baby will take the car keys and be sort of engaged by the shiny things for a little bit and start jingling them and bashing them repeatedly against the table in front of the high chair. And eventually, you know, winging them. It's amazing how hard a fussy baby can throw a key ring. And then the long-suffering parent will pick the keys up and hand them back to the baby. And the baby will jingle them some more and bash the table with them some more. And then chuck them across the restaurant again. Now, this is not to say that our children ever did this. No, they did not. We would, for a lot of years, we would attempt to be like, you know, civilized grown-ups and go somewhere besides McDonald's once in a while. And we'd sit down to dinner. And let's say out of the four children, one started to misbehave. Well, you know, collective punishment is frowned upon in international political and diplomatic circles, but it was a way of life with us with the little ones. When one started acting up, I'd get that look from Agnes, and she'd say, "We'll be in the van," and she said it that way, sort of flat and monotone,
with a sort of Clint Eastwood, Dirty Harry-ish whispered quality that let me know that that there was going to be, that she was not going to be deterred from her determination, at which point she would collect the children. You know, we would have already ordered our meals. Money was already spent. Just get them to box it all up to go. Sit and enjoy your dinner, dear. You've had a long day. You worked. You earned it. Sit and enjoy your dinner. We'll be in the van and we'll eat when we get home. Because Agnes was absolutely dedicated to the proposition that other people who came to that restaurant to eat should be able to enjoy their meal without somebody's heathen children screaming and carrying on. More often than not, if we were somewhere that there were other heathen children, they were allowed to scream and carry on and run around. Not ours. Oh, no. No, damn it. No. Because, well, we used the line, the old Ronald Reagan line, when one of them, and this is not to say they did it every time. We had several meals where, at least two or three, where we all sat at the table together and enjoyed our meal with no fussing or fuming or feuding or carrying on. But if it started, we adopted the old Reagan policy. I know it sounds strange coming from me, but still. It's, you know, family dynamics, not world geopolitics. We do not negotiate with terrorists. Only, unlike Ronald Reagan, we were serious about it. We were not going to sit there and negotiate with the little punkins and, you know, well, here, I'll give you the keys and you can throw them across the room and hit and get them to land in somebody's soup if you'll just be quiet. No. Unlike Ronald Reagan, who did negotiate with terrorists, who did trade arms for hostages, who did engage in all the skeevy, filthy business with the financial, the dark money transactions that wound up arming a bunch of fascist thugs and death squads in Central America. We didn't negotiate with terrorists or toddlers. But you can well imagine that it's a different story when the toddler in question has access to a nuclear arsenal. And when the toddler in question begins screaming screaming vulgarities and Anglo-Saxonisms and Middle English words that he doesn't even know are Middle English, and carrying on like the beast that he is, well, you got to figure out some way to placate him. And that's what H.R. McMaster has apparently done. I didn't realize that Congress has to certify or decertify the Iran agreement every 90 days. But apparently that's the case. So what's going to happen, apparently, is that in order to effectively handing Trump some keys to jingle, he will be allowed to say that he will not certify it himself, but he'll leave it up to Congress, and then he'll stand there and pontificate on how bad the deal is, which it actually isn't. In the Washington Post story, Vali Nasser, dean of the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, said he doesn't want to certify the Iran deal for more domestic reasons than international ones. He doesn't want to certify that any piece of the Obama strategy is working. So once again, this comes down to the another in the ongoing nightmare that is the damnatio memoriae of the presidency of Barack Obama. Because the Iran deal is working. But if he admits that the Iran deal is working, that means that Barack Obama did something right, and that in turn will infuriate the maggots. Yep. Jesus. As disturbing and worrisome to you as it is to me, and I know we wind up talking about it a bunch, but God Almighty, we're in a place where history provides no guidance, at least not American history. We are in the undiscovered country. We don't know how to deal with a situation like this. One Western diplomat said, "We're on a tightrope. We don't know what will happen." And that's, and you know, when you get to those places in world politics, bad things have a way of happening. So, Guerin, writing at the Washington Post, says, as a practical matter, Trump's expected move will place the onus on Congress to decide what to do next. Working with Senator Tom Cotton, oy vey, a leading congressional hawk on Iran, the White House would refrain from recommending that Congress reimpose nuclear sanctions that were suspended under the deal. That would buy time for new legislation codifying Trump's conditions for remaining in the deal, formerly known as the Joint. It would also increase U.S. leverage with European allies who don't want to renegotiate the deal. All because a 71-year-old mentally deficient toddler can't stand the idea that a president did something before him and did it right, all while being, you know, black and Kenyan and Muslim and stuff. The news is chock-a-block with reports from people leaking inside the White House about what a midnight nightmare out of bedlam it is. So lo and behold, this afternoon along came John Kelly, chief of staff, answering questions. Now, this is the guy who was spoken to so rudely, with such vile contempt by Donald Trump, that he said he, in all his career as a Marine, he had never been spoken to like that by anyone. So in the same sense that when Rexxon Tillerson was asked, "So, did you call Donald Trump a fucking moron?" He said, "I don't want to talk about things like that," instead of saying, "Well, hell no, I'd never do that." Because if he'd done that, it would have been a lie. He did refer to him as a fucking moron because he's a fucking moron. So, in the Q&A that took place today in the White House press briefing room, retired four-star Marine General John Kelly, White House Chief of Staff, said in response to questioning, I would just offer to you that although I read it all the time pretty consistently, I'm not quitting today. And I just talked to the president. I don't think I'm being fired today. That's not the same as saying that things are not dysfunctional inside the White House. Yeah. Kelly went on to say, I'm not so frustrated in this job that I'm thinking of leaving. He said he was bothered by the constant reports that he's on the way out the door. It is astounding to me about how much is misreported. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt that you're operating off of contacts, leaks, whatever you call them, but I would just offer to you the advice. I would say maybe develop some better sources. Yeah, well, now. Again, that's not quite the same thing as saying, no, hell no, Donald Trump never spoke to me more rudely and more vulgarly than anyone has ever spoken to me in my entire career as a United States Marine. That's not the same thing. And then he went on to say that he said, when members of Congress say things that are unfair or critical, the president has a right to defend himself. Well, see, that's the interesting thing. The tiff between the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini and Bob Corker started with a tweet storm, you know, by the Clementine Caligula. Based on a simple statement by Bob Corker previously that, well, he didn't seem to have some of the skill set that you were really looking for in a president. And that's and that made him absolutely wild. Because as he tells the maggots time and time again, he's the most presidential president that's ever presidented in the presidential history of president. Kelly added, I was not brought to this job to control anything but the flow of information to our president so that he can make the best decisions. I was not brought in to control him, and you should not measure my effectiveness as chief of staff by what you think I should be doing. Really? Let's look at that one again. You should not measure my effectiveness as a chief of staff by what you think I should be doing. Well, how the hell do you measure his effectiveness as a chief of staff then, huh? Do we measure his effectiveness as chief of staff by the fact that the 71-year-old toddler isn't dangling naked from the White House chandelier? You know, every day that Donald Trump keeps fucking clothing on is a win, but and means that John Kelly is doing his job. Is that it? Trying to explain away those Excedrin headache number 9,573,612 photographs of him with his hand on his forehead in a pose that every adult, every person who has ever been parent to a misbehaving toddler knows well. And it extends past toddlers, okay? It's just it's one of those parenthood things. With him standing there while Trump is embarrassing himself, the nation, you know, embarrassing children as yet ungotten and undreamt of. Well, on those photographs, John Kelly said, oh man, the evasion here is just precious.
You guys with the cameras. Always catch me when I'm thinking hard and it looks like I'm frustrated and mad. So apparently, by the admission of John Kelly, he looks like he's frustrated and mad when he thinks hard. Do you look like you're frustrated and mad when you think hard? Because, you know, being progressives, liberals, decent people, we do a lot of hard thinking. Here in our little current events bubble, we think about these things. We think about the issues. We confront them day in and day out. Sometimes we're downright beset by them, and we think it. But do we look like we just want to go and get all Beowulf and tear the arm off a monster or something? No. You guys with the cameras. You always catch me when I'm thinking hard and it looks like I'm frustrated and mad. I'm just a big teddy bear is all. I just look like that when I'm looking, because I do some of my best thinking when I'm looking down at my shoes and muttering those Yosemite Sam noises. Wag, stag, and nut, pull, frenzelack, and snack, and orson. That's just me thinking, you guys with your cameras. You silly guys with you. Because, see, the thing is, the guys with the cameras will train a camera on him. And so there's bleep, 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 bleep. You know, you heard it this earlier with the clip of him using his crayon to sign his executive order that's going to make it harder for people to have insurance. You know, the cameras are fast, those pro cameras. And so there's not a moment, so it's not like there's a moment there when Donald Trump is saying something inexpressibly stupid and John Kelly at the same time is just standing there with a great big grin on his face like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. Those photographs don't exist. Look, it's if you're a John Kelly, not that I have a great deal of sympathy for him or H.R. McMaster. I mean, after all, at the end of the day, they agreed to work for this monster. This monster who threatened Puerto Rico today. Now they agreed to work for him. So that cuts my sympathy down considerably. And he did that. He threatened Puerto Rico today, where millions still don't have power, where people are dying, where the death toll is rising, where in some remote villages, there's like 6 liters of water for an entire family. And little military snack packs. We're not even talking about full-on MREs. Just little snack packs to get people from one day to the next. And Donald Trump declared today that, well, you know, the military can't stay there forever. And we may have to pull them out. What are we going to do when we actually know how many people died in Puerto Rico? What are we going to do when we actually count that? What are we going to say about Donald Trump? Hey, here's a question. If we had a functioning Congress, would Donald Trump's behavior with regard to Puerto Rico be an impeachable offense, a high crime or misdemeanor? And I guess the day count continues, waiting for him to say something about the fires in California. More people have now died in the Napa fires than died in the Great Fire of 1933 in Los Angeles. And that was the previous record. And he has said absolutely nothing. Not a damned thing. Do we know do we know how bad this really is? As much as we talk about it, as many facets of it as we consider, do we realistically actually have a handle on how much damage is being done day by day? I don't think we do. Not that I'm trying to be, you know, Bob Bum out, but I don't think we do. Well, you know, he might well be. Silent R. Lamar saying, come on, Bob, Trump is singing Burn Baby Burn about the California fires. He hates California, you know. He hates California because California so thoroughly, utterly, completely, and totally rejected him in November of 2016. There's a reason that there was a prompt response to the hurricane damage from Harvey and Irma. Those things affected states that were acceptably loyal to Trump in 2016. For Donald Trump, we are not all one nation, under God or otherwise. Trump is a jiggling adipose wad of grievances and petty vindictiveness. You remember when Dim Leader said, "You're either with us, or you're either for us, or you're against us." And it was repulsive and repugnant when he said that. But Donald Trump has taken it to an entirely new level. We've got a new nominee for the Department of Homeland Security. John Kelly's former assistant. She was announced today. And she had received praise for what she did relative to Harvey and Irma, and then came Puerto Rico. Her name is Kirsten Nielsen. I call upon the Senate to confirm this tremendously qualified and talented nominee. Yeah, that was today. She's a dedicated leader whose priority is always the safety and security of our country and our citizens, not politics or ideology. John Kelly got her the job as DHS secretary. She was, you know, his right-hand assistant when he was secretary of DHS. She had actually gone to the White House with him, and now he has sent her back to DHS, which fueled, frankly, rumors that he was on his way out. And that way she would have a place to be independent of him when he decided it was time to hit the bricks. When he jumped or was pushed, whichever comes first. Kirsten was integral to the process, to the progress we've made in controlling our borders, confronting gun violence, preparing for disasters, and protecting aviation security. Yeah. She was a loyal Bushy on the Homeland Security Council. She worked for TSA before. She is said to have been served as the enforcer for John Kelly in the White House. Interestingly, a member of the Bush administration said she was actually less qualified to lead the Department of Homeland Security than Elaine Duke, the person who is running it on an interim basis. This former Bush administration official said, I think her credentials are being a little bit inflated. Seems like more of a lazy pick than a wide search. Of course, Duke may have had a hard time getting confirmation because she was the one who stood in front of a camera and said that the federal government's response to Maria in Puerto Rico was a good news story. That's the one that got Mayor Eulyn Cruz of San Juan right het up. Meanwhile, with a sense of history, who knew that there was a Democratic member of the House of Representatives from Mississippi stand? Well, there is, Representative Benny Thompson. He's a ranking member on the House Homeland Security Committee. He said he was glad that there was at least a nominee after Trump had let the critical national security position remain vacant as the nation faced multiple major hurricanes and a domestic terrorism attack. Oh, look! How about that? He actually referred to that good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Stephen Paddock, as a domestic terrorist. He may be the first member of the government to do so. But he went on to say he's very concerned about Kristen Nielsen's Bush administration past, quote, because, quote, during its botched response to Hurricane Katrina, and I'm fearful that DHS, as well as this president, has not learned all the lessons from that tragedy, given what we're seeing unravel in Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Yeah, because we're still not doing that Berlin airlift thingy I was talking about. It isn't happening. It isn't okay in Puerto Rico. And even if we were, the situation would still be dire, but there might be something resembling hope. As it is, officials on the ground in Puerto Rico are making it abundantly clear that we are treating Puerto Rico like a colony in which we are simply not much interested because it isn't doing much for us. You know, colonies that don't produce don't get. And colonies that even get don't get much. As I said before, if we had a functioning Congress, somebody might actually be mentioning the I word in regard to this, to Donald Trump's disdain for the people of Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico! Also, Puerto Rico! God, God, God. So, you know what? Let's take a break. It's 10 past the hour. And, you know, just a little break. Not a big break. Just a little one. See if anybody wants to engage in conversation. If you don't, that's fine. I'll filibuster the last 50 minutes away. It would be nice if we were not laying a goose egg tonight. We started out with $200 to raise, and we're still at $200. Sorry. You'd be a little surprised if I came on the air tomorrow for Friday on the Front Porch and said, I mean, I don't like talking about it, but at least, you know, at least I let you know where we stand. And we are 12 days away from the 12th anniversary as an online-only, as an online-only broadcast, the 12th anniversary of the Horn. I wonder if we'll have some big hole to crawl out of on our 12th anniversary. I don't know. You know what would be nice? If in the next 12 days we would find the remainder of those that we need via either the little click box at the interface on the website or patreon.com/BobKincaid. If we found the remaining, 320 folks or so that we need to fully subscriber fund the program. Yeah, I know. That'd be like 312 into 30. That'd be like 30 subscribers a day. That's impossible. But it still would be nice. So, yeah, a little break. If you want to engage in some conversation, you're mighty welcome to. If you don't, well, I'll filibuster on. This is listener supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. We'll be back. That is not what I wanted. Let's try this again. Okay, so we'll try something else. Yeah, okay, why not? Let's do this again.
Through the middle of my skull. At night I wake up with the sheets soaking wet and a freight train running through the middle of my head. Only you can cool my desire.
Short song. Told you it'd be a short break. 15 minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 12th of October, 2017. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Subject line, by my estimate, I believe it will take four Democratic terms as president, that would be 16 years, with a decent Congress, House and Senate, to correct all the crap that Dolt 45 is in the process of doing. We aren't privy to some of what's going on. We aren't. We aren't. Meanwhile, thank you. Thank you to Ralphs. I'm offering a $25 challenge. Hugs, Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so very much. That would, if that $25 challenge is met, that would take away 25% of this evening's fundraising goal. So that's a big deal. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed, Ralphs. I didn't realize that the latest Atlantic hurricane was named, Nate was the last one, so we're going to be at O. Ophelia. Really? Ophelia has formed up and reached hurricane status in the Atlantic. But the Western Hemisphere can apparently breathe a sigh of relief. It is the 10th consecutive named storm in the Atlantic to reach hurricane intensity. That's a little weird, but here in a few years, it'll just be commonplace. Mm-hmm. Boring, even. But it's the 10th. Yeah, the 10th named storm, Ophelia is. And you can't throw a name like Ophelia out and not just tickle the Shakespeare neurons of every English major nerd in the English speaking world. Mm-hmm. Get thee to a nunnery. And, of course, Ophelia in Hamlet drowns with her clothes on. So there's that, too. Well, Tropical Storm Ophelia became a hurricane yesterday. The 10th consecutive named storm in the Atlantic that got to hurricane intensity. Here's the weird part. The projected path of Ophelia will take it away from the Western Hemisphere altogether. The storm will apparently pass very close to Ireland and the UK this coming Monday and Tuesday. It won't be, since it's moving into the North Atlantic, it won't have the
the ferocity of, say, a Maria or a Harvey, it's still weird, and it's going to pack a punch. There will likely be hurricane-force winds striking the Ireland and the UK. How strange is that? And by the way, that business about 10 consecutive named storms reaching hurricane status, that hasn't happened since about 1893. 4 times. 1878, 1886, 1893, and 2017. To the best of our knowledge. Why not Oberon, Randy, and PA? I don't know. I'm not in charge of the naming. It was, you had a male name in N, so I guess you get a female name in O. But Ophelia is way north in the Atlantic, where it formed up. So that apparently the tropical trade winds didn't grab it and push it westward. And it will pick up speed as it goes northward. In Ireland, the Irish Meteorological Service says that Ophelia has the potential to be a high-impact event in parts of the country. Strong winds, heavy rain, high seas. And yes, it is, in fact, rare. Just to give you an idea of what can happen, back in 2006... The remnants of Hurricane Gordon moved over Ireland and Northern Ireland, and they packed 65-mile-an-hour winds and knocked 120,000 people out of power. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, it is worth noting, speaking of out of power... Let me do this real quick. Thanks for going out. Very good responses to Ralph's challenge. Thank you, Ralph, for getting it all started. And thank you very kindly to Brother Deacon Asa. And thank you to our dear friend Alma. Thank you, Alma. And thank you very kindly to Silent R. Lamar. You know what that means? We just cut tonight's fundraising goal in half. It can happen. So thank you all very, very, very much. And thank you very kindly to Kitty. Suddenly, we have only $90 to go to finish fundraising for the evening, which would be pretty monumental. You know what? It is Conversation Radio. Let's go check in with Thomas over at FYINation.com. Hey, Thomas. Oh, Thomas, you're connected.
Try that again. Hi, Bob. Sorry about that. I thought I had my mic on, and apparently I didn't. Talk about Conversation Radio.
Yeah, funny how that happens.
That said, I wanted to talk to you about Ophelia near London, well, UK and Ireland. I actually have family. And this is another one of those weather events that seems to be hitting my family and friends hard. I mean, the storms in Florida hit friends of FYI Nation. The fires are hitting my family, and literally my aunt had to be evacuated. And in the UK, I have an uncle who lives in the UK. So it's like there's no safe place for this, and we only have one Earth. And I wish you do it, but I wish more people would talk about the fact that this is going to soon and quickly become a migration crisis, and not only a migration crisis, but a planet-wide climate catastrophe. And this so-called war on coal that I've been talking about, and I know you talk about on a regular basis, I talk about only thanks to you, and been talking about it since he signed that executive order to get rid of the coal, clean power thing, because he's a moron.
Yeah. No. Wait a minute. We've got to have some protocols here.
Okay.
You said he's a moron. That's not correct. I keep seeing it referenced in the for-profit media that Rexxon Tillerson referred to him as a moron. This is factually untrue. And I don't think we can get hung up on ceremony, Thomas. I don't think we can get all worked up about... No. If we're going to refer to what Rexxon Tillerson called him, we have to call him a fucking moron. Donald Trump is a fucking moron. Because that's what a man who works intimately, closely with him said about him. Donald, so if you just remember, you're not being offensive, you are being journalistically accurate, Thomas, when you say Donald Trump, say it with me, 1, 2, 3. Donald Trump is a fucking moron.
Fucking moron. I can totally say that. It's so much better than, well, not as good as scrotus. One of my, and your listeners, gave me that. I love that. Scrotus is awesome. The scrotus in chief, and V.T. Blum, gave me, when he was still around, sphincter, for our friend and former press secretary. I miss sphincter. He was a good liar. Sarah is just like, has that smug look that her daddy
had. But she's got that smug, evangelical, I'm saved and you're not, and I'm going to heaven, and you're going to get a pineapple up your ass for all eternity in hell kind of look on her face. But the thing is, the goddess of irony is working overtime with Sarah, because she says things that are true, even though she thinks she's saying something that's true that everybody she knows will know is untrue. For instance, she said, the president is an incredible supporter of the First Amendment. Now, I had one of those little I'll need to sacrifice a rubber chicken at midnight to the goddess of irony moments, because she spoke truth. She didn't know she was speaking truth, but she did. And it's because I'm a practitioner of the art of word knowing. What she said was absolutely true, Thomas. Donald
Absolutely.
Trump is an incredible, meaning not credible, supporter of the First Amendment. In other words, he does not actually support the First Amendment. He is not a credible supporter of the First Amendment. She said it, I didn't.
Do you think she's doing this? I know that this is probably not true, but do you think she's doing this on purpose?
No. She's in the hands of the goddess.
Yeah, that's true. I was hoping it was purposely done, and somehow she was like trying.
No. It's not like she's blinking torture in Morse code with her eyelids. No.
That was Finkler.
And by the way, I'm going to point something out here, and I'm not trying to be sexist or anything like that. I'm just sharing an observation that came via Agnes. We saw a clip of her as we engaged in our little morning ritual. We saw a clip of Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And really, I think she should just stick to Huckabee, because it's so confusing out in the media when you see Sanders says Donald Trump, greatest president ever to blah, blah, blah. And you're, really? Bernie said that? No, oh, wait a minute. We're talking about that lying Baptist. Okay. And so there's some confusion there. On the other hand, you know, No, Agnes was looking at her, and she was wearing this sort of lipstick fuchsia dress. And
that's a regular appearance.
But what Agnes said, and you know, if I needed to, I could call her back here, and she would say, "No, Bob, you're not just putting words in my mouth. I said it." So, and you know, Agnes is female, so Agnes gets to say these things about her appearance. What the fuck is wrong with her eyes? Those were Agnes's words. What the fuck are wrong? And I said, "What do you mean?" She, I think those are false eyelashes she pulled off a dead doe. Those are the damnedest things I've ever seen. She said, "How can she keep her eyes open? Those sons of bitches have enough mascara," and just kind of went off on that sort of women talking about other women, sort of. And you know, I wasn't gonna, because I don't, because I value my right. But she's in the hands of the goddess, Thomas. I mean, when she stands there with a straight face and says Donald Trump is an incredible supporter of the First Amendment, anybody, any practitioner of the art of word knowing knows what she just admitted. That he despises the First Amendment as much as everybody has suggested and as much as he has more or less admitted.
Yep.
As Will in Chicago just pointed out in the chat room, did Sarah Huckabee Sanders raid Tammy Faye Baker's casket? Well, she does look kind of like she does. You know, she's an evangelical fundamentalist homosexual Baptist, so she might be a tomb raider.
Now, to be fair, Tammy did go through a change of life and became very kind and much more liberal than in her later years than her husband, the potato soup man. So I don't know why she did it. Maybe it was because of her co-host and that show she had afterwards. But there was on Netflix a documentary about her, and I have a lot more respect for her than I did beforehand. If you want to talk about stealing some makeup, we can go to Mrs. Crouch, and we totally understand why Paul Crouch allegedly did the cocaine and the meth and the gay hookers. And we can totally be like, okay, dude, I get it.
No, I
get it.
But the fact that you know she can say that, and it's just, you know, nobody goes, "Oh, really?" I mean, I can't be the only one that noticed what the real meaning of incredible is.
No, they do, but remember, we've talked about this before, and I talked about this on some say. They want the access. Or their corporate overlords won't let them. I mean, I give real credit to Stephanie Ruhl, who was the one who was like, "No, our reporting is accurate." And then I can't say it on the air, but he said effing moron. And that's how we all know that it was fucking moron.
Yeah. And as practitioners of internet broadcasting, I think we owe it to people to actually use the words. Fucking moron.
Indeed. And I try to be as accurate as possible. And anybody who knows me knows words are hard for me. I don't know why, but some words I just can't say. I regularly screw up the plumbing company and the news bureau writers. Sometimes I do it on purpose, and sometimes I don't. Bob, can you explain that to me?
No, except to say that Freud may have been onto something. As James just wrote in and said, subject line, Drumpf's words, he's always saying incredible and unbelievable. And, you know, Freud would say there's a reason for that. That's his subconscious trying to get through the lies that it knows that the id or the superego is out there telling. I'm not a psychologist, and I don't play one on the radio, but I think that's how it works. Yes, Bobs, that is exactly how it works. Well, I'll be damned. Sig, we haven't seen you in a while. Not a problem. I'll be over here with the cigar. But that's you know, that there are tells. I mean, that's why great poker players are great poker players, because they can read the tells at the table. And if you read the tells on Donald Trump, you know when he's lying, and it's not just when his lips are moving.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. When he's excited about something and really into it, is usually when he's telling the most truth and about something. I've noticed that a lot. Like when he doesn't have to think about it and it just kind of flows like a tweet that he just.
Well, I mean, you saw that fluffing session with the Hannity job, right?
No, luckily I didn't. I've caught snippets of it.
You know, sometimes you got to take one for the team, okay? You just do. You don't want to. You think there's a whole lot of things better that you can do with your life than that. But if you're going to do this, you kind of got to do that. And he was at ease, and he was joking, and he was, because he knew that he was not going to be challenged. He knew he knew that he was going to be able to lie, embellish and bullshit just like he's done all his life.
Yeah, but and to be clear though, what I did see of it was when Hannity and I gave him a little bit, like the most minuscule amount of credit that I can give him, when he did press him on what does the thing about you'll wait and see mean, or however he said it, I can't recall exactly, but Hannity pressed him on it like three times, kind of like when Paul was asked about Jesus three times, and then he didn't answer. But I mean, that was the most actual reporting Hannity has probably done in his entire life. Or somebody said, if you're going to ask him anything hard to make us look good, ask him this. He's not going to say, but ask him this. Because anybody who knows anything about Hannity knows that he's completely scripted. He's more scripted than that blonde bimbo Liz Wheeler on One America News Network, who replaced Tommy Loren. Have you seen her, Bob?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Oh, my God. She's another millennial who is, like, all trumpeteering. And
just say she's one of the maggots.
Yeah, fair
enough.
She's
one of the millennial maggots.
And she is, I mean, I get shrill, but her shrill scares my community when I play her. Like, I have to kind of give a warning before I play Lizzie, because it's like the version of The Exorcist coming out. And I mean, Tommy Loren would have her moments of shrill too, but it was never nearly as bad when we do this. And I could say this because I let people call me shrill, and I think I'd like to think I'm a shrill expert, but this is just like nauseating tone where it's trying to be assertive. But if you've watched any actual normal interview of her on YouTube where she's just like being asked questions, basic conservative questions, you know she's so out of her depth without her teleprompter, she needs to just like wheel it around with her. And I mean, I screw up on words all the time, but I'm happy to make a joke out of it and be unscripted. I would be, if somebody put a teleprompter in front of me and said, do the news, be like Brian Williams, I think I'd throw up. I wouldn't be able to do it.
I can't watch Brian Williams. I'm sorry. I apologize. I just can't. You know, no, they've got him in there. You, you get Chris, then you get Rachel, then you get Lawrence, and they're all doing really good cerebral work. And then there's just something so middle of the road, so milquetoast, so unseasoned oatmeal about Brian Williams that he's unwatchable to me.
Yeah, well, I didn't say it was watchable. I was just saying, throwing in a comparison. But that being said, they put her final points on the YouTube, Bob, if you want to take one for the team later tonight, and have a makeup tips, I guess, would be the polite way to say it, on who the next what's her name? I just said it too. That woman, that lovely woman.
Oh, who the next white power Barbie is?
Yeah, that would be her. That would totally be her.
Oh, by the way, we're not supposed to. It gives her a sad when people call her white power Barbie. That's apparently sexist. Maybe it is. I mean, somebody can tell me if it is. I'll quit using it.
I'll use it more. In fact, I'll change it. White Klan Barbie.
But apparently no. I don't know. You know, and Jesus, but well, she's. Where's the next one? Who knows? Who knows? But see, the thing is, what we know, Thomas, is there will be a next one, because there is an infrastructure to raise these people up, to teach them how to do this stuff, to there's a minor league, and then of course, you know, when you make it to Fox, you've made the bigs, and then you sort of like the senior tours when you get shifted over to be the. To be the right wing weirdo on The View.
Yep.
But they've got an infrastructure for creating these things. Meanwhile, it happens over on our side entirely on an ad hoc basis. People say, I want to do this, and then they find out, and they do it with little to no support, and they find out how goddamn hard it is, and they either make a yeoman effort and then fade away, or they just, you know, they double down and they lash themselves to the rowing bench and say, no, hit the drums a little louder, a little harder, stroke. And
Bob,
yes?
Please don't use stroke and me in the same sentence.
Okay. Sorry. Anyway, my bad. Really bad. Trigger. Okay. Yeah.
That's the trigger.
Okay, we'll just lash you to the mast. We won't put you on the oars, okay?
Yeah.
So no one will have to yell stroke at you, okay?
Yeah, me and stroking is bad. I might get the wrong impression.
How are you doing these days? How's your health?
Good question. So far, so good. Only medication. I will be going to Yale on Monday for my regular monthly checkup right before my birthday, which is ironic, 3 days before my birthday. And I will turn 40 next Wednesday. Thank you. I will not be anywhere near Yale on my birthday. I am so thrilled that I will be in Detroit. I know that's weird saying, but I will be with my girlfriend for my birthday. I was able to get permission to travel.
I find absolutely nothing weird in that.
Well, when you have a heart condition and everything else, you have to make sure that you can distances and everything else.
Are you flying?
No, I'm not flying. I'm leaving the driving and breaking down to Greyhound. So I may not get there on my birthday. I hope
will. Just remember, when traveling on birthdays and otherwise on Greyhound, keep your money in your boot.
Yes, and pray that the guy does not decide to smoke a doobie, which is I'm totally cool with, but not do it in the bathroom. The driver will smell it, pull the bus over, call the police on you, and make you late.
But he could, maybe he'll just bring, maybe some dude will just bring some edibles on board, and then he'll overdose on the marijuanas like Matt Bevin's so worried about.
Well, you can keep worrying. But no, that wouldn't happen to me. It would be what happened the last time I was on Greyhound. Luckily, they held the buses for us because there were so many people for transfers, they had no choice. But it was the most ridiculous thing that I had ever gone through. And, of course, it was on my way home as opposed to, you know, going there that happened to Vegas. But, yeah, no, the health is doing well, and it looks like it's a continuing progress. And the funny thing is, they still have no reason for the left ventricle to tell me fuck off. They have absolutely no reason or clue. They just have said, as long as you keep taking the medication regularly and your blood pressure keeps going the way it's going, you should be fine, and we'll worry about the right ventricle because that's the one that we've always worried about since birth, and that one's ticking away, knock on wood, perfectly fine, and I thank you for asking because you didn't need to, but I do appreciate it.
Oh, I think it matters. It matters. And by the way, you're getting happy birthday wishes from the chat room, so.
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
and
preemptive happy birthday wishes.
Yes, preemptive. And I'm still, back in 77, I was still a fetus, and the GOP, P being the operative word, especially in Russia with hookers, cared about me. That's when they still cared about me. Then I popped out, and they didn't give a damn anymore.
Yeah, right. Oh. Exactly. That's how it works.
On that note.
Well, I was just going to ask you real quick. So what kind of a schedule are you keeping these days over there?
Right now, because I'm going to be gone next week, I've been doing a three-hour show every day, and I finally got YouTube working. So if you want to see me and hear me and join our chat, which yesterday or today, I just woke up, so for me it's yesterday, had about five people in it in our YouTube chat, plus our other chat that was on our website page. So everything was hot.
How do you find it on YouTube?
Just search Doubting Tom at FY Nation, and if you go to somesay.info, when I post our show notes, I post the actual YouTube clip in there, so you can go straight from there as well, and that usually comes out at 10 a.m. So I have our show notes and everything ready to go.
So you're doing video, and I mean people can see you in the flesh, and you're there, and you're juggling and doing magic tricks and a little of the old buck and wing, some tap dancing, you know.
And by the way, I used to tap dance as a kid and play the accordion. I know, total dork. And somewhere there.
No! You don't get to say things like that on this air. No! If you don't play accordion on the YouTube channel, it never happened. Okay.
You do not. You barely want me on the YouTube channel, let alone playing an accordion. I think that would totally scare away everyone. But that being said, I'm not responsible for any broken monitors or anything like that, whether you throw them or because of something I said or anything like that. I'm just throwing that one out there. But you're welcome to stop by. We have great chats, and you can call in via video or the phone number we have. And I thank you for that little bit of promotion, Bob, because that's appreciated as well.
Oh, my pleasure. I mean, and you've got you, you've got Tara. When does Tara do her thing?
Tara does her thing every Saturday at 7 p.m. live. She's on Progressive Voices the Sunday at 6 and 6 p.m. Eastern. And then on 4 p.m. on, I want to say, yeah, Wednesday, we replay her Tara Buster. So you can, if you miss that because you can't You can find it multiple places.
Poke me with a sharp stick or something sometime soon. I got to remember. I got to get Tara on here and just talk about what she's doing, because Tara is nothing short of amazing and wonderful and awesome.
She is absolutely awesome. She is has been so kind and generous. We've had our moments on air and off, but they're always funny in the long run. And she has been so kind and generous to me that is even when we have our moments, she is a pleasure to work with. And I would anybody.
She's a pro.
Yeah, total. And if we could get enough donations over at FYI Nation to get her on daily, we would put her up against the guy who has some Russian backers. Just saying.
I think that's over.
Oh, okay.
I heard that the other night. Yes.
Oh, okay. Tom Hartman, who used to. And I do like Tom Hartman. I've called him. He introduced me to Bernie Sanders. So I don't say a lot bad about him. But there are some moments.
I think what's pathetic is that progressive broadcasting is so poorly supported by the people who benefit by it. And I'm not talking about ordinary listeners. I'm talking about infrastructure. I'm talking about people with, you know, Jed Clampett walking around money. I think it's I think it's pathetic that progressive broadcasting is so poorly poorly supported that people went I don't care who's offering money, I like to eat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, years and years and years ago, I remember when another progressive broadcaster went to work for a short time for Press TV, the Iranian outfit.
Yeah.
Because you gotta have the support.
Well, that's the thing. We're working. What FYI Nation does is a lot. What you do is we are looking for original broadcasters, and we will support you. We are bare bones, but we will. Our goal is to get as many progressive, actually. The right word would be secular, because we are going for a 503c3 because we want to be a nonprofit and be able to do this and raise money fundraising wise. So anyone with a true voice who wants to be able to come on the air
and see if you've got what it takes. I mean, I wasn't kidding. There's a whole lot that goes into all of this, and this is not me climbing up on the cross and just, you know, nailing myself in or anything. But there's more to it than meets the eye. You know, let's put it this way: if you were sitting in a booth in Vegas is probably, but still, it's Vegas, and you had the headphones on and the board in front of you and everything, and you were broadcasting live and you were doing a show 3 hours a night, 5 nights a week, for thousands of people. Yet people won't work in Vegas that way. And, you know, to try to do this and say an 8 hour a day job, it's goddamn near impossible.
You're absolutely right. And for our network, by the way, for us, and I'm not doing this to promote, I'm just saying what it costs. For our bills to actually be paid, and this is one of the reasons why I'm trying to go doing YouTube, even though I'm terrified, but my wonderful girlfriend has said, just fuck it and do it, because this way you can at least help the network and they'll hopefully pay you, is to monetize. And
I admire you for having the courage to do it. I don't. Because I won't do video unless I'm in a position where I can do video the way I want to do it. If there was a program out there that would, like, animate whatever's on the screen into, like, talking kittens and giraffes and hippopotamuses, I'd be on that like a duck on a June bug.
because it'd probably be pretty interesting. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm not sure. I'm not sure what I'd be. I don't know. I don't feel like being a kitten. But you know, maybe I could be a talking dolphin. Or there are people out there. No, Bob, be a talking horse's ass. It, you know, it comes naturally to you. But I could get into that. But just the idea of sticking a camera in here and pointing it at me while I talk and you know, drink Fresca and work all the little knobs and turn three different directions and, you know, scratch myself and stuff like that. No.
That is the beauty of it. You need some encouragement, and I wanted to monetize, and we do have some great donors. I'm not downing our donors that we do have, but we need $40 a day to stay on the air. And while I'm lucky enough to right now, because of my health issues, live at my parents, and I'll let you go after this. I don't want to have them paying for the extra bandwidth that it takes to run everything. It's not fair to them. I want to be able to do this on my own for the network's sake. And I don't have a sugar daddy, so, or mama. So since I don't have those things, what I went and did with her support and everybody else's who's been watching, I do the video. And it's tough because, Bob, you know me and my anxiety, and we talked about it on air. But I throw that away and ignore the fact that I'm on video as much as I can, except to make sure that everything's working properly, and just do the show as I was on radio. And if people stay, people stay. And if they don't, they don't. And hopefully it works out. And I'll keep doing it until, you know, we're kicking ass the way you tell a story. Because, man, I love the way you tell stories. I got to say, I wish I didn't have to sleep my schedule the way my schedule is. Because when you get into a story, it's just, it's quite wonderful.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you, Thomas. You have yourself a wonderful evening, all right?
You too, my friend.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy Thomas from FYINation.com. I worry about Thomas, but I'm glad he's getting the medical treatment that he needs. You know, November 1st is open enrollment, and you know, on nights like this, and thanks to everybody who chipped in, we've managed to get everything but $90 of this evening's fundraising goal. I want folks' input. You know, open enrollment for the ACA, if there's any ACA left to open enroll for, is November 1st. So sometime in early November, I'm gonna find out what it's gonna cost for me to have something resembling insurance. And I'll come back and talk to you, and I'll tell you about it. And we'll see, you know, we'll see how it all shakes out. So, I'm just one of those Americans who doesn't have health care, and doesn't know if you know I can afford it. And I guess it'll be kind of like a little experiment. Sort of like the way that as I've said before, it would be really nice if at some point in time some journalism operation would go and follow and find out about the medical bills that come after one of these outbreaks of NRA freedom that we have. You know, when you think about not the dead, but the wounded from Las Vegas, for instance, the treatment bills for that are going to be in the millions. It can't help but be, given the number of people who were hurt. And sadly, there probably will be very little coverage of that. Well, that's for another day. Tomorrow's Friday on the front porch. Depending on what happens with the overnight crew, our loyal band of subscribers and supporters, hopefully we won't have, you know, like 290 to go tomorrow. It'll be more like, you know, maybe 250 or 240 or, God, maybe only 200 or, oh my God, finish the week early. That would be amazing. So thanks everybody for joining in this evening. Thank you to our
chat room moderators, Sparky and Steve from Georgia Stan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, everybody.